Blog Talk Radio.
They said we could.
Stay in the lab.
Bells at Long Island.
Absolutely.
Spend some time in the country. We're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country. Leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone. The best in music, too. Time in the country, we've been waiting here for you. Here in the country, waiting here for you.
Live from Ontario and heard around the world, welcome to In the Country with Dave Woods. This is the place for up close and personal interviews, as well as great country music from our featured guests. So sit back and relax. Today's show starts right now.
Bill Anderson was just 19 years old when he wrote City Lights, which went on to become a number one song for Ray Price in 1958. With that credit to his name, Bill moved to Nashville to begin a successful recording career of his own with hits like Still, Mama Sang a Song, and Po' Folks. He soon earned the nickname Whisperin' Bill. Over the years, along with more hits as a singer and songwriter, Bill was a game show host on Fandango and an actor on One Life to Live. He also hosted Opry Backstage on TNN, which had me tuning in every Saturday night. In recent years, he's written songs recorded by Brad Paisley, Kenny Chesney, George Strait, and Sugarland. We'll be joining Bill Anderson, rather, will be joining us in just a few moments. Very much looking forward to talking with him. Right now, we're going to play a remake of one of his classic songs, Po' Folks. This is done Christmas style. Please enjoy Bill Anderson and Po' Folks Christmas here on In the Country.
There's a whole lot of people looking down their noses at me, 'cause I didn't come from a wealthy family. I guess I learned to take it for most of the year, but every December when Christmas drew near and all the other families were out spreading cheer, we're sitting home being poor folks. Our Christmas shopping was thumbing through the new catalog, looking and wishing and wanting everything we saw. Little toy trains and little toy boats, and sister kept looking at the little girls' coats. We all sat down and wrote Santa a note, but Santa don't come to see poor folks, and we walked nothing except poor folks. We was poor folks living way in the country. We never heard the jingle of the jingle bells. Ho, 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 we was poor, poor, poor. And if we had Christmas, we made it ourselves. Daddy took a hatchet, and Daddy chopped a pine tree down. The only decorations were the ones we made or found. Brother saw some holly in the rich man's yard. He picked it up fast and ran home hard. Mama knew he stole it, but bless her heart, Christmas ain't easy on poor folks, and it ain't no time for whipping poor folks. I remember one Christmas it was blowing and a snowing mean. Wasn't nothing in the kitchen but a few of Mama's home canned beans. Some ladies from the church brought a basket of food. Mama kind of smiled and she said, "That's good, but why don't y'all take it to the folks down the road? They ain't got as much as we do. Why, they're just poor folks." She only kept a chicken and enough to make some homemade bread. But you'd have thought we was feasting from the blessing that my daddy said. And later when the kids was tucked in tight and the fire was nothing but a flickering light, you ought to heard my mama sing.
Silent night.
'Cause that's what you do when you're poor folks, and we wasn't left except poor folks. Oh, Christmas time when you're poor folks. Most of the time we're so poor we couldn't even pay attention. But you know what? The Lord sure must have loved us poor folks. He made a pass of love us. I'd like to take this opportunity to say from me and mine to you and yours, Merry Christmas from all the poor folks.
And that is Bill Anderson from his CD, No Place Like Home on Christmas, a great remake of Po' Folks. That is Po' Folks Christmas. And we are joined on the line from Nashville by Bill Anderson. Hi there, Bill.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Great to talk with you.
Well, it's good talking with you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well, and all the best for the holidays. I was a big fan, of course, of your music, and Opry Backstage was something I always looked forward to every Saturday night, seeing you sit down with top stars in country music and chat about their career in music, and it was just such a pleasure to watch.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. I enjoyed doing that show very much. I was kind of sad when they canceled it because kind of gave me a chance to visit up close and personal with my friends and then kind of keep the TV audience and the country music fans up to date on the things that were going on in and around Nashville. And if they were to ask me again to host that show, I'd probably say, how soon do I start and when?
Oh, that would be great because, as you say, it's great to be able to go behind the scenes of the music with the artist, and you're a great interviewer, so it always felt like just a nice conversation and getting us up to date, and so I would love something like that to come back with you hosting it.
Thank you. Well, I don't consider myself an interviewer. I was not trying to interview people on that show or on the satellite radio show that I did for 7 years called Bill Anderson Visits with the Legends. What I preferred to do was just make it look like it was just a conversation between me and friends, which is exactly right. What it was. And we were just talking about things and letting, you know, 5 or 6 million of our closest friends listen in.
Very cool. Now, I've got a couple of hellos for you, Larry, here in Canada. Sorry, I'm getting to the name of the person, Bill, that we love you here in Canada. Now, Larry Delaney of Country Music News wanted me to pass on a special hello.
Well, do that right back to him. I've known Larry for a long time. He's been mighty good to me. Think a lot of him. Merry Christmas to Larry.
Yeah, that's an awesome publication, and Larry's listening tonight. And also, Missy from Alberta, a songwriter, wanted you to know that she's got some more honey garlic barbecue sauce to send your way.
You tell Missy we're coming back to Alberta right after the first of the year, and I'm expecting her to come and have it wrapped in a big red bow.
That sounds terrific. Now, Bill, in the intro, I was talking about the very first song. You were just 19, and you wrote City Lights, which went on to become a 13-week number one hit for Ray Price. Now, when you wrote that song, like, had you been writing songs for a while in your teens, and how did you get that song pitched to Ray?
I started making songs up, Dave, when I was about 10 or 11 years old, and I just enjoyed doing it. I always loved to write. Whenever the teacher in school would say, you know, your homework assignment is to write something, everybody else in the class would go, oh, no, and I'd go, great, you know, because I've always loved to write. And I've always loved country music, and I was able to put a couple of my loves together and begin to write country music. As far as how I pitched City Lights to Ray Price, I really didn't. In fact, it's a very interesting story. I wrote the song up on top of a little three-story hotel in a town where I was living. I was working as a disc jockey on a radio station in Commerce, Georgia. And there really aren't many city lights in Commerce, Georgia. My dad told me later on, he said, I should have known you were going to be a songwriter if you could look down at Commerce, Georgia and write about the bright array of city lights as far as I can see. But I recorded City Lights first on a little small label out of Texas called TNT Records. Mm-hmm. And my record got to Nashville, and Chet Atkins heard it. And he was producing an artist on RCA at that time by the name of Dave Rich. And Dave Rich was the first person to cover City Lights after I put it out. Ray Price heard the Dave Rich record on a little country music station in Nashville when he was riding to the golf course with Ernest Tubb. They were going to play golf. And Ernest Tubb was the one, the story has been told to me over the years, that Ernest Tubb was really the one that was attracted to the song, and he heard it. He said, he called Ray, he said, son, you really need to record that song. That's right up your alley. And Ray kept telling me, well, you know, I've already got my next single cut. And I think all the way around the golf course that day, I think Ernest kept badgering Ray. And I've often wondered if Ray cut the song because he liked it or whether he cut it just to get Ernest Tubbs shut up.
That is too funny. Wow. And when that started to climb the charts and do so well, you, I mean, at 19 years old, you must have just been higher than a kite.
You know, I didn't really know. I'm sure now looking back on it, I really didn't know what to make of it. It all was happening so fast and so furious. And, you know, one day I'm just this little local disc jockey down in Georgia, and the next day I've written the number one record in all of country music. And it's like, whoa, yo, what is all of this? And it was a wonderful way to get started in the business. It opened all the doors for me in Nashville, and that's when I came here and decided to just see how far I could carry this thing. And that was about 50 years ago, and I'm still here trying to figure it out.
Now, in 2002, Bill, BMI named you its first country songwriting icon. Now, the word icon, and people also use the word legend to describe you, how comfortable do you feel with those labels?
I had to look up icon in the dictionary. I didn't know what it meant. You know what's so funny, what's so strange, is it just seemed like all of a sudden one day I went from being Bill Anderson newcomer to Bill Anderson legend in people's minds. And I've tried to figure out, how did that happen? How did I get from there to here? And I guess it's just the fact that I've been able to survive a lot of years and continue to work doing something I love. It's a great compliment when people say things like that to you and about you, but I never got in this business to win awards or to collect accolades and things. I got into the business because I love the music, I love the people, I love going out and entertaining, I love writing songs. The whole process is just something that I love. And the other things that have come along have just kind of been the icing on the cake.
Now, one of the songs, Bill, that brought you back into the forefront, and I remember this very well, Steve Warner back in the early 90s re-recorded a song of yours called The Tips of My Fingers. And Steve Warner is one of those artists that in the 80s I was just a big fan of. I've got all his tapes and records and love him as an artist. Now, so he recorded that, and that, I guess, brought a little more attention back to your writing. Was that sort of a resurgence for you to get back into things?
It really was. It was the wake-up call that I needed, because I had stopped writing songs in about 1982, 83, the early part of the 80s. The music was changing, and I wasn't really sure that I knew how to change with it, and I pretty much kind of got away from songwriting, did a lot of other things. And when Steve cut Tips of My Fingers in 92 and it went to number one, I thought, wow, wait a minute. Maybe I still can reach this new country music audience. That's a song I wrote 32 years ago. I can write some more of those if that's what people want. So that was really what gave me the impetus and the desire to get back in and try to start writing again. And I've thanked Steve for that many, many times over.
Now, it must feel pretty good, as you were saying, you thought maybe your style, it's your style and the times were changing, but, you know, we're now in 2009 and you've got songs out, George Strait recently and Sugarland. Have you been able to change your style at all, or has country music sort of come around back to you? How does that all work?
No, I think I've been able to be flexible and to change a little bit. The biggest change is after Steve had the big hit with Tips of My Fingers, I realized that I needed to do what most of the writers in Nashville were doing at that time, and that is to co-write. Now, they were getting together with each other and teaming up and writing songs, two writers, three writers, and I had never done much of that. I'd done a little bit, but never did very much. And so when I started co-writing, I sought out the people that were not only successful, but people who maybe came at it from a little bit different direction than I did. Because my roots were basically traditional country. I cut my teeth on Hank Williams, Carl Smith, and Webb Pierce, and Farron Young. And that kind of music was not flying in the 90s. But I was able to get with people like Vince Gill and Brad Paisley and various ones of the newcomers, Steve Warner, of course, many times. And they kind of showed me how to write for the new audience. And I like to think that maybe I showed them a little bit of what worked for me all the years, and we kind of blended all of our influences together.
That's very cool, and the co-writing thing has been a big success. I was reading Country Weekly recently, and this made me smile, the comment about that you still attend songwriting sessions with a pad of paper, pen, and a tape recorder, as opposed to, you know, the modern Blackberries and so forth. And I guess that's a joke among some of your co-writers.
Well, Brad Paisley looked at me one day when we were writing not too long ago, and he looked over and he said, "Well, hey, Moses, when did you quit writing with a hammer and a chisel?" I don't want you to get me wrong. Now, you know, because you and I have emailed back and forth, but
yes.
I know a little bit about a computer. I'm just more comfortable taking a piece of paper and a pencil. I don't even write with a pen because I write so many things I want to erase, so I write with a pencil. A piece of paper. Now, when I get home from the writing session and when the song is complete, then I'll sit down and put it onto my computer and keep it that way. I'm not totally computer illiterate, but I just like the process of writing on a sheet of paper.
Right, right, for sure. And I guess you still get that thrill when you're in with a co-writer and you stumble upon that idea that just really comes together and you're right on the heels of a great song. Still get that excitement?
Oh, yeah, there's no feeling quite like that. When you know you're onto something good, you know you're onto something different, you don't know that you're writing a hit. People ask me, well, did you know that was a hit? Of course not. You don't know if you're writing a hit, but you know if you're getting everything out of the idea that you can get out of it, that can be gotten out of it, and there's a great satisfaction to that, and I get just as excited, maybe even more excited about it today than I did, you know, back 40, 50 years ago.
Wow. Now, one of the songs, and I've heard this on Brad's album, and then I caught the YouTube video of you and Brad Paisley singing this with your introduction. A very humorous song, and yet there's some a lot of truth to it as well. It's certainly both things. The song "Two Country" that Brad Paisley and guests recorded, that obviously is, I guess, the way you feel. You obviously love country music and are able to still make it today. So maybe tell us a bit about that song and writing it.
Well, I had written what I thought was a really good straight-ahead country song, and I took it to one of the new young record producers in town, and he listened to it, and he said he thought it was a good song, and I said, well, you know, you're going to record it with one of your artists that you're producing, and he said, no. And I said, well, if it's such a good song, why aren't you going to record it with somebody? And he looked at me and said those two words. He said, it's too country. And I took offense at that. I mean, it just kind of went in one side of me and out the other. I mean, I was very upset about it, and I was telling this friend of mine, you know, I said, I don't know, how can something be too country? I've never heard of a rock and roll song being too rock. Or,
that's right. Well, yep.
How could it be too country? And he and I sat down and started fiddling with the idea. I didn't realize for a while that we were actually writing a song, but at the end of the day, we had written the song, and it struck a chord with Brad, and he made the record and had me and George Jones and Buck Owens come in and sing on the record with him, and it won the vocal event of the year in 2001, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think it definitely echoes a sentiment that a lot of people, including myself, as much as I love all the country that's coming out and from the past years, but it's still great to hear something that sounds like a country song and has all the emotion in it and the writing. So it's great to know that that's still being done and people like yourself are sort of, I guess, fighting for it.
Well, I just think two countries, two words that don't belong in the same sentence.
Great way of putting it, Bill. Now, another thing I wanted to talk about was the family reunion shows. They're so popular. My parents have all the DVDs, and I've watched them, and it's great you talking with the other legends and about stories behind the songs and singing the songs. That must be a blast to film those.
That is one of the most fun things that I have ever been a part of. We started them back in 1997. Not having any idea what we were doing. We just got a bunch of country music people together and sat around the circle and had a what we call an old-fashioned guitar pull where one person would sing and then the next person would pull the guitar out of his hand and play it and they'd sing, you know, just kind of telling stories and all. We had no idea at the time that we would be, in a way, really actually making country music history because in the 10 or 11 years, 12 years now, I guess, that it's been since we started, we've lost nearly 30 of the entertainers that were a part of that very first session. They've passed away. And so it's a wonderful way for the fans to remember some of these great legends that we've lost, and we continue to make the shows. We're going to make some new ones in January, and I'll let you in on a little secret. I hope I'm not talking out of school here, but I happen to know that the producer is extremely interested in coming to Canada and doing a series in Canada, so I'm really hoping we can do that.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. Did I hear also that the show would be coming on the road?
Yes, we're taking the show on the road. We took it to Branson, Missouri back about 4 or 5 weeks ago and just had an incredible success with it out there. There wasn't an empty seat in that theater for 2 nights, and people came from everywhere. They came from up on the East Coast, the West Coast. I don't know if anybody was there from Canada, but there probably was somebody there.
Yeah.
It was just an incredible experience. Jim Ed Brown, Jeannie Seely, Helen Cornelius, myself, and then some of the entertainers from Branson like Buck Trent, Barbara Fairchild, Mary Lou Turner, Leona Williams. We just had an incredible time, and the plan is to hopefully take the country's family reunion all across the country in the next couple of years.
That would be great, and I know there's fans out there who love it, obviously, because there aren't as many venues these days when the artists now are not getting played on radio to necessarily see them. So to see them all together and reminiscing is great for you guys and for us as an audience. So I look forward to that. I want to catch a show if you guys come to Canada.
Thank you. Well, I sure hope we're able to do that.
Now, I wanted to talk about, so you've had a lot of songs recorded and even recently by country acts, and we're going to get to a song in a moment that, your Christmas song, Christmas in Your Arms, that has been recorded by Reuben Stutter. I want to talk about that, but also, Bill, is there any other artist out there outside the country world that you would love to hear record one of your songs?
You know, it's really, I love it when somebody like Reuben Stutter takes one of my songs that I wrote as a country song, pretty plaintive song in the way that Steve and I wrote it, and he interprets it the way that he hears it. See, I think that's what a real artist does. They anybody can trace a picture or copy a picture. It takes a true artist to paint a picture. And I've been so fortunate over the years. I've had people like James Brown, Aretha Franklin, Bing Crosby, Dean Martin, Lawrence Welk. I mean, I've had so many people above and beyond the country genre record my songs, and every time they do it, and every time they put their own stamp on it, it's just so special to me because I don't consider it a cover song. People say, well, that's a cover record. No, it's not. It's an artistic expression of somebody who was creative enough to hear a song that touched them, and they take it and make it their own. And I don't think a songwriter can be paid any greater compliment than that.
Oh, for sure. It's showing that they love the song, and they're adapting it to their style. And that's a great thing. And I was listening to the Reuben Stutter song earlier today, and to hear how he took your version, and now it's very smooth. And as I read somewhere, they've taken the twang out of it, and it definitely fits his style, and he's done that. And I think that's also the strength of a well-written song, that someone can do that.
Well, that's what I meant when I said it's a great compliment to the songwriter, because,
right,
Reuben is saying, number one, I like the song enough to record it, and I want to put my touch to it, and that's just very special. I've never met him, but I'm going to, and I'm going to thank him for doing it and tell him what a great job he did.
That's awesome. Now, I want to share that song we just talked about called Christmas in Your Arms that you wrote with Steve Warner, and it appears on your Christmas CD, which is a great CD. I've been listening to it this last week. It's called No Place Like Home on Christmas. A lot of traditional songs on there, plus a couple of originals, including the Pole Folks Christmas version, which I love that. It's got some great message in it as well as being humorous.
Thank you. Well, when I wrote Pole Folks to start with, when I wrote the original Pole Folks, I wasn't trying to tell people how poor I was raised, because I really wasn't raised as poor as I made out in the song. The point I was trying to make in that song, and again in the Christmas version of it, is that it's not the material things in life that are important. That's not what's important. What's important is the love that you share. Like in the original song, I said we patched the cracks and set the table with love. And that's what I'm trying to get across. And in the Christmas version where, after everybody goes to sleep on Christmas Eve and the fire is dying down, Mama sits around with the family and sings the old Christmas songs and all. And that's what's important in life, and that's what I was trying to say when I wrote that song. It does have some humor in it, but I was kind of using the humor to make a point.
Oh, definitely, yeah. The message is loud and clear, mixed in with some humor. And, yeah, it just makes you feel good, and I think that's obviously the intent you had. Now, I want to share the song, Bill, Christmas in Your Arms. Do you want to tell us a little bit behind the writing of this?
Steve and I got together. I don't remember. You know, most Christmas songs are not written in December. Most of them are written in April or May or July because you got to get them ready, you know, to get them out during the Christmas season. And I remember telling Steve the day we wrote this song, I said, you know, Christmas songs probably don't sell as many records as regular love songs or just plain country songs. But I said, there's something very special in this song. I said, one of these days, I said, it may be many years from now, but I said, one of these days, we're going to be glad we wrote this song. And Steve came up to me last Saturday night at the Opry after we had heard about Reuben started recording it. He said, well, is that day here now? I said, yeah, I think it very well may be getting close.
Isn't that something? So you obviously know, as we will when we listen to it, that there's really something special in this song, and it captures a feeling of love for a partner and in a very melodic and lyrical way.
Thank you.
So I'll share it now with our listeners, Bill. This is Bill Anderson and Christmas in Your Arms on In the Country.
All my friends are asking me where I plan to spend the holidays. People seem to celebrate the season in so many different ways. Some go where the weather's freezing cold, while others like it warm. I don't care about the weather, just whether I spend Christmas in your arms. We could drive up to the mountains, build a fire and watch it snow. We could sail down to the islands, where the gentle breezes blow. I'd be happy in the city, I'd be happy on the farm. I don't care where I spend Christmas, as long as I spend Christmas in your arms. It was only last December, I had no Christmas spirit in my heart. My world lay cold and shattered in the ashes of a dream that fell apart. But now you're here beside me, no greater gift is wrapped beneath my tree than the arms you've wrapped around me and the precious gift of love you give to me. We could drive up to the mountains, build a fire and watch it snow. We could sail down to the islands, where the gentle breezes blow. I'd be happy in the city, I'd be happy on the farm. I don't care where I spend Christmas, as long as I spend Christmas in your arms. We could drive up to build a fire and watch it snow. We could sail down to the islands, where the gentle breezes blow. I'd be happy in the city, I'd be happy on the farm. I don't care where I spend Christmas, as long as I spend Christmas in your arms.
Merry Christmas, baby. I hope this is the best Christmas you've ever had in your whole life. I know it will be for me, because I'll get to spend it with you. Merry Christmas.
from his great Christmas CD, that is Bill Anderson and No Place Like Home on Christmas. You can buy that CD along with other merchandise at billanderson.com. Be sure to check that out. There's lots of great information there at the website. Now, Bill, I want to talk about your new CD in a moment, but I wanted to flash back to the 80s. I know this was a great time in your life that you enjoyed on One Life to Live. What was that experience like for you?
They called me and asked me if I wanted to be on a soap opera, and I said, I guess so. My whole life has been a soap opera. I might as well be on one. It was a lot of fun. It was something I had no intention of ever doing. It was just a door that opened, and I've always kind of been the kind of guy that if somebody offers me an opportunity and I think it's something I would enjoy, then I try to take advantage of that opportunity. And I was on One Life to Live off and on for about 3 years. I was playing the part of Bill Anderson, country music singer, so it wasn't a big stretch. They kind of let me put things into my own words, and they would kind of guide me as, you know, in a general direction. But they said,
right,
say it like you would say it, you know, if you were really in this situation. So
sure,
it was a lot of fun, and I found a lot of fans discovered me through One Life to Live and through some of the game shows and things that I did on television, who had no idea that I was in the music business, but a lot of them have stayed with me and been very loyal fans.
Now, along with the acting, you've done that, and you've written a couple of books, your biography in 89, and a great book with the title, I Hope You're Living as High on the Hog as the Pig You Turned Out to Be. Couple of books there. So you're an author, you're an actor, singer-songwriter. Is there any area of the music business, entertainment business, that you haven't tackled yet that you might think about, or have you covered it all?
Boy, I don't know what it would be. I've been so blessed to be able to do so many different things. Some of them I'd like to go back and do again, like we were talking about the Opry backstage television show,
right,
those kinds of things. I'd like to revisit some of those things. But, you know, I'm really basically a pretty content person. I read the other day that the two best things that you can be in your life in order to be truly happy is be grateful and be satisfied. And I'm both. I'm grateful for everything that's happened to me, and I'm very satisfied with where I am in my life right now, and I've been very blessed.
Can't ask for more than that, for sure. One thing I can never get enough of is hearing stories behind songs. I buy books on those, and anytime I can hear sort of how a song was inspired and how it ended up being written. So could we talk about maybe two of them and start with Still, your classic song that actually crossed over to the pop charts as well. What was the inspiration behind that song, Bill?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll try to make it as short as I can. I had gone back to my hometown in Atlanta, Georgia, and run into a girl that I dated when I was in college, and we were both married to different people. We had not continued our relationship. But I ran into her at a television station where I went to do an interview. She was working there. And I don't know, it wasn't like I was still in love with her, because I wasn't. I was in love with my wife, and I'm sure she was in love with her husband. But I came back to Nashville, and I couldn't get the thought out of my mind of what it would be like if I really was still in love with her. And I got up about 3 o'clock in the morning and went in the den at my house and wrote Still in a relatively short amount of time, having no idea that it would be what we call in the business a career record, because it was really the record that established Bill Anderson as a recording artist.
Right. Wow, that's a great story. And that ties into, so it's a one-word title in that Country Weekly article that I read recently. It was quite interesting how you talked about, because you've had a few hits with one-word titles, and you had an interesting explanation to do with the jukeboxes and how that might have tied in.
Well, what I was trying to say to the writer that was doing that interview, I said, years ago, the biggest place that you sold records, and especially single records, was to the jukebox operators, the people that put the records on the jukeboxes around the country and all. And
right,
if you remember, the jukeboxes, you know, they had the little cards in there where you could see the
yep,
title, and if you had a real long title on a song, it was so long it wouldn't fit on there. I remember I wrote a song called Think I'll Go Somewhere and Cry Myself to Sleep, and it ended up on the jukeboxes, Cry Myself to Sleep. You know, they didn't have room to put the whole title on there. So I think in a way that kind of made me think in terms of short titles, one- and two-word titles, and they've been pretty good to me over the years.
They sure have. Another song that's been very good to you in more recent years, one of my personal favorites of the last quite a while, Whiskey Lullaby, which Brad Paisley recorded along with Alison Krauss. Can you tell us a bit behind that? And I understand that it wasn't originally written with a duet in mind, but that sort of came after the fact.
No, it was not written as a duet. In fact, it was Brad Paisley's idea to turn it into a duet. He called me one afternoon on the phone, and he had already told me how much he liked Whiskey Lullaby, and he wanted to record it. And he called me, and he said, "What would you think if I made it a male-female duet?" And, of course, my first question was, well, who? I mean, who do you hear doing it with you? And when he said Alison Krauss, I just, you know, whoa. Because, you know, she could sing the phone book, and I'd buy it. She is
right.
So good. And we all held our breath for a couple of weeks, hoping that the two record labels could work it out, because she was under contract to one label, and he was under contract to another. And you're just holding your breath, hoping that the business side of it is not going to come in and mess up the artistic side of it, and we were very fortunate in that it didn't. And I wrote that song with John Randall, but the original idea that I had the day we went in to write and ended up writing Whiskey Lullaby was I went in with the idea to write a song called Midnight Cigarette, and I was telling John about my idea, and he loved it, and we wrote the line, "She put him out like the burning end of a midnight cigarette," which turned out to be the opening line of Whiskey Lullaby. When he came up with the line of putting the bottle to my head and pulling the trigger, I said, "Let's forget about the midnight cigarette." Your line's a whole lot better than mine.
Wow. That is, wow, that's, and what's great about that song, it's a great song, of course, and it also proves that, you know, if you write a great country song, and obviously get the right people to record it, that people out there are going to enjoy it, and it's going to climb the charts, because that song.
Well, we were scared of that in the beginning. We really were, because people said, "Oh, it's such a sad song," and you know, this kind of thing. But
right.
Fortunately, they made such a good record, and the video had a lot to do with that song being the
great
hit
video.
It was.
Yeah.
It was just terrific. Ricky Schroeder produced the video. I guess he'd want to be called Rick Schroeder today. When he was a child actor, he was little Ricky Schroeder.
Yeah, on Silver Spoon.
But he produced the video, and the video really kind of took the song to a whole new level.
Yeah, definitely. The video sort of explained some stuff and showed them getting together afterwards, which was kind of a nice conclusion in the video.
Yeah.
Now, Bill, I want to talk about your brand new CD. It's coming out early next year, and we're going to have you back on again to sort of go more in depth on it. But I was reading a quote where you were saying, this is going to be a little bit different. Maybe is it more of a humorous CD? Is that the difference on it?
Well, we started out to try and do that, make a kind of a lighthearted record all the way through. When you've made as many records as I have, it's kind of hard to come up with a different idea and a different concept, because we've done so many different things. So we started out in that direction, and then after we cut five or six of the kind of lighthearted, humorous songs, I said, you know, I think people are going to get tired of nothing but that. I said, I think we've got to put a few ballads in there. And so we found, I think, some very, very strong ballads and other songs to kind of mix it up. So it really ended up being kind of a variety of different kinds of songs. They're all brand new songs. They're all songs that I've written. Or co-written, and I've had some great co-writers, and I think the people will find this record to be maybe just a little bit different from anything I've ever done before, and I really hope they're going to like it. Hope you like it when you hear it.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to hearing it. Bill, and for our listeners to order it when it is released in the new year, they can go to billanderson.com, and that would be a place to order it?
They can go to billanderson.com, and they can order CDs and pictures and tapes and jams and jellies and preserves and T-shirts and hats.
Everything
else we thing. Can think of. If there's a Bill Anderson fan out there, or if you have a friend or a relative who might enjoy what we do, come on and visit. We've got some specials on there for Christmas right now, and I think we can probably get them out in time for the holidays.
Oh, good. Awesome. That's great. Yeah, there's a lot of information there, and you do a journal every now and then, and you sort of talk about different subjects and events and that, which is always great. Now, we've got a bit of time left. I've got a couple more questions, Bill. One is there any CD in your collection that we as your fans would be surprised to know about? Obviously, there'd be Brad Paisley and a lot of the country CDs in there, but is there any that might be a little bit different?
Yeah, you'd probably be very surprised, because when I'm not listening to country music, which I do most of the time. I listen to a wide variety of country music, everything from the current songs back to the very, very traditional country music. I put on easy listening music, light jazz, just to kind of relax. Maybe I'm around the house at night and got a fire going in the wintertime. I'll put on Jim Brickman, I enjoy. He's a wonderful piano player, plays that.
Definitely, yeah.
Very relaxing type music. I'll put on records by different guitar players. I listen to a lot of the things that Chet Atkins did over the years. Just kind of that type of music. I find that some of my friends look at me kind of funny. I'll have a couple of radio stations punched up on my car radio, and they'll say, you're listening to jazz? What are you doing? I said, well, I like it. It's, jazz is a very creative music. It's a lot like country in that it's a lot of self-expression, and I enjoy it.
Oh, that's great, though. That sort of lets us know a little bit something new about you. That's great. Canadian connections. I know that you do writing with Canadians and they've recorded your songs. Can you think about any artists that might stand out or songwriters you've worked with here in Canada?
Oh, my goodness, so many of them. Terry Carice comes to mind, the late Terry Carice. I knew him and we did some things together. Steve Karliski was living in Toronto, I guess, when he and I first met, and we didn't really write together, but I recorded several of his songs. And of course, the king of all the Canadian songwriters, Gordon Lightfoot, has been a dear friend of mine down through the years, and we've done some things together. I've recorded some of his songs. I don't think he's ever recorded any of mine. I need to talk to him about that.
I think so. Gotta return the favor.
I tour in Canada a lot. We were up there. Back in the spring of this year, we were mostly out in the Maritimes, and in the fall of 2008. What year is this? Fall of 2008, I guess. we did a long tour out in Western Canada, and we're coming back to Western Canada in the spring, and coming to Ontario in the late spring in May. So always love to come up there. The Canadian fans are the best in the world.
Perfect. I'm going to do my best to get out to one of the Ontario dates. I look forward to that, Bill. And I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to finally get to speak with you. And the Christmas CD I've really enjoyed, so I'm going to be playing that as the weeks go on leading up to the big day. I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. And again, Bill, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Dave. Nice talking to you. My best to you and to all of your listeners and your mom. I get emails from your mom occasionally, so tell her I said hello.
Oh, and, she'll love that.
Look forward to seeing you when we do get up that way in the spring.
That sounds great, Bill, and look forward to speaking with you again. We'll talk about your brand new CD in the new year. My guest today has been singer, songwriter, and country legend Bill Anderson. Be sure to visit his website, billanderson.com. I'm Dave Woods. Thanks for spending time in the country.
Spend some time in the country. We're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country, leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone, the best in music too. Spend some time in the country, we've been waiting here for you. Here in the country.